Hey there, Spacemakers. I'm Daniel C, joined by my good friend and co-host, Matt Bain. This is the third season of The Spacemakers, a podcast to help you live an intentional, meaningful life. More than a podcast, this pod course will help you get unstuck in one area of life, one step at a time, by helping you shift the way you live and work. Big thanks to our sponsor, Bulk Nutrients. Enjoy a 5% discount on protein powders and health supplements for orders over $45 at bulknutrients.com.au. Just enter the code SPACEMAKERS.
The Spacemakers with Daniel C. and Matt Bain.
Hi everyone, welcome back to season 3 of The Spacemakers, where we are helping you to get unstuck for a surprising second act. And we are up to episode 9 of 10, and I'm here with Matt Bain, the secret source of the Spacemakers podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate being referred to as saucy. That's been a long-held goal.
That's excellent.
Great to be here for the home straight.
Yeah, home straight. And we're going to talk about the importance of traveling alongside others as we head towards the wrap-up.
That's right. I believe that must be the T in shift.
The T in shift, yeah. So, look, I want you to imagine, not just you, but our listeners, I want you to imagine feeling stuck in life. There's a habit that you want to shift or a change that you want to make. And, you know, you sit there and you think, I just need more discipline. I need more self-belief. I need more, I don't know, motivation and drive. But I suppose what we'd like to question in this episode is whether or not that's helpful thinking. You know, is motivation enough? Or is it that we might need to think about who we're being shaped by? Because our environment, the people we spend time with, who we travel alongside, can make such an enormous difference, particularly if we're trying to get unstuck.
I don't know about you, although we have spent a fair bit of time together now, so I can probably guess. Yeah, like you
enough
think,
for you to say that, you know, feel I comfortable can saying you're saucy.
Yeah, call me saucy. Be fair to say, I think we all kind of know, or we all kind of intuit that change, as in personal change, is actually, well, it involves a social process. Mm. So, like, change is social. So, we can look to psychology, we can look to neuroscience, we can look to sociology particularly. But I think, you know, again, we can just as importantly look to personal or anecdotal experience to know that the people that we spend a lot of time with have a profound influence on our behavior. Mm. So this quote's been doing the rounds for a while. It's attributed to Jim Rohn, I believe, the late Jim Rohn, who said pretty much you are going to be the average of the 5 people who you spend the most time with.
It's so true, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if the 5 people is scientifically validated, but it's definitely true that who you spend time with, who you shape your life around, will actually shape you back again like a mirror, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's so easy, particularly in our, I don't know, individualized social media-based culture, to just think it's all about you. It's about your habits. It's about your motivation. It's about your strategy and drive. So we really want to kind of, I don't know, lift the lid on the importance of it being about others, because it's not actually about you. A lot of who you are is shaped by those you travel alongside.
And like you said, I think that the mirror metaphor is good in terms of reflection and also like reinforcement. Mm.
And the beautiful thing is, if we're stuck and you're trying to find ways to get unstuck in a domain or area of your life, you know, one small step at a time, well, then you can actually start by looking outside of yourself and reflecting on who do you spend time with and who would you like to reflect or mirror. And that can be a great strategy for moving forward, which we're going to talk about.
So, Dan, we love research.
Yes, we do.
We want to base some of this stuff on actual science.
real science,
the hard
rather
science,
than just our made-up stuff.
So please tell us about a study that is really pertinent to this topic of change being social.
Yeah, excellent. So, look, we stumbled across this study. It's from the Journal of Social Psychology from 2008. So, it's a few years ago, but it's called Social Support and the Perception of Geographical Slant, or what I prefer to call the Jack and Jill study. So Jack and Jill went up a hill to fetch a pail of water. The question is, why did they do it together instead of walking up the mountain individually? And this study actually helps to explain that deep conundrum, which I imagine you've been thinking about for years, Matt, right?
Well, that and, you know, on a bad day, did Jill actually push Jack? He fell somehow, right? I don't think he just tripped.
Oh, yeah. We're going to focus more on the start of the story, sure. Not the end of it. Sure. But I love how some research studies are just, I don't know, quirky or interesting. I don't know how they came up with them. But basically, scientists were trying to work out whether or not who you do life with actually makes life easier. And so they set up kind of a, I don't know, mini lab at the base of a hill, or, you know, it sounds more like a mountain. And when people walk past, they try to recruit them into the study. And so simply they ask them to estimate how steep the mountain was in front of them and how hard it would be to climb. They used a number of kind of well-designed metrics, I think visual metrics. They would write stuff down or estimate it. They would use what we call haptics. So they would put their hands on kind of tilt boards and estimate how steep the mountain was. But look, needless to say, this has been well verified in other kind of mountaineering research. But what was interesting is that when walkers were solo, well, then they would consistently estimate the hill to be steeper than if they were walking alongside someone else, which, you know, is interesting, right? And then they asked about the quality of the relationships between those people who are walking together. And what they found is if people describe their relationships in terms of warmth and connection, if they had high trust in the relationship or could maybe rely on each other in tough times, well, then those pairs would actually describe the mountain as being even less steep than those who are walking with a more of a kind of an acquaintance, and even more so than someone who was solo. So, I mean, bottom line is the research has showed that our perception of a climb of a mountain, or maybe a difficult goal or something that's hard to achieve, is actually easier when we're with others. We perceive that life is easier and that challenges are less challenging when we're with people, particularly if we trust them, we know them well. So, you know, why did Jack and Jill go up the hill? Well, they did it together because it was perceived to be less complex than walking by themselves. I will quickly read a quote from Dennis Prophet, who was one of the study's authors. He said, "Friendship and social support change how we perceive the world and how our bodies work." And it's a simple study, but I think it's an interesting idea when it comes to the idea that behavior is shaped by who we do life with.
Yeah, that's good. Potentially intimidating or tough change is going to be perhaps slightly less intimidating and perceived as being easier, or at least less hard, if you do it alongside a trusted company.
Yeah. And look, the sad thing about the whole story is obviously Jack and Jill had a falling out on the way, and therefore, you know, either Jack or Jill pushed each other down the hill and
Jack had a big falling.
We went from there. But the research, that could be part two of the research study.
No, that's good. That's good, mate. I'd be happy to climb a mountain with you. I'd like to have you alongside.
That sounds good.
That's a Sherpa kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Thanks, Matt. I'll take that as a compliment coming from you.
I know it sounds like a pretty simple study, but the results still surprise me. That's probably not a finding, if you like, that I would have just intuited or guessed.
Yeah, well, especially the idea that we actually perceive things differently based on who we're doing life alongside. And I think that definitely has an implication for, you know, different areas of life. If you're in a team, if you're alongside people who you trust, well, then you can actually tackle hard things with less complexity.
Yeah, well, that's the number of it for me, because I think I probably would have guessed that the people, particularly people who I'm close to, they are going to have an influence on how I perceive things. What I wouldn't have picked up is that one of those common effects of being alongside someone who I'm close to is that potentially difficult tasks seem less hard or less difficult. That's the thing that really surprised me.
Yeah.
That effect.
Yeah. And look, I think that definitely kind of links into this theme of being unstuck. And so when we feel stuck, how do we get alongside people we trust, who we have an affinity with? How maybe can we walk alongside others who feel stuck as well? Because we know that we can lighten their load, be their Sherpa, and make their journey easier.
It's a privilege.
So, Matt, from Jack and Jill to the SHIFT framework, do you want to summarize for our listeners the journey we've been taking you on, this acrostic that helps people get unstuck?
So week by week, S is for select. So we asked people right from the very start just to kind of focus on one domain of life where they felt stuck, because we wanted to keep it doable, realistic, and not overwhelming. And second, of course, is the H. So we talked about harnessing your strengths. So again, for most of it, it's just so easy to start off from a place of deficiency, focusing on our weaknesses and trying to shore them up. But we made a case for how the science actually supports the idea of starting with a strength. So using a strength to get most leverage. I was for imagine multiple paths. So again, it's easy for us to kind of get stuck in a tunnel when it comes to problem or stuckness and then solution. So we just double down on the thing that we've already done.
Yeah, pros and cons list, either or thinking rather than multiple paths, which we talked about in that kind of episode.
That's right. So imagine multiple paths. And then we got up to F, which stands for forging ahead with action. So again, there's a place for reflection, there's a place for contemplation, for planning, but eventually action is needed and action breeds motivation.
We talked about tiny habits and we talked about time blocking last episode, which we're going to feed back on in a moment.
Yeah, that's right. And then the T, which is where we are now, traveling alongside others.
Amazing. Yeah, as we climb a hill.
Yeah.
Well, what was our activity from last week?
Yeah, so the activity was to start off with it. Step one was what we called a time audit. So that was finding a place that's conducive to focusing on your calendar or your diary, say over the past like couple of months, and seeing what that reflected in terms of your priorities and values. So, because we talked about really how you spend your time, regardless of what you say and what you intend and your aspirations, how you actually spend your time and what you've actually put down, blocked off in your calendar or your diary is a really good indicator of what is truly important to you.
Yeah, you are what you do, essentially. And so your values need to be reflected in your time.
Yeah, I am what I do and the five people that I spend the most of my time with.
The five people you spend your time with, that's right. That's, now we're just mixing metaphors. Yeah, yeah.
So that was step number one. So step two, take a tiny, just a tiny like little action that you want to kind of bake into your calendar and start time blocking it into your calendar and diary. Find the time, find the space, put it in there regularly, make it a habit.
Yep, excellent. So how'd you go? You've been working on commitments, haven't you?
The commitment therapy. Working on drawing them back a little bit, being a bit more discerning with them. For one of my roles in life, I have to do like a fair bit of public speaking, right? Like a fair bit of talking. And I want to do that well and I want to get better and better at it. But it takes a fair bit of deep work, right? Mm. And so if I don't plan for that and schedule for it, because it's deep work and because I'm naturally like more of a social beast, it's just easy for that time to get relegated to, you know, spare time, leftover time.
Yeah, okay. And then do you find yourself doing like a crunch towards the end of the
year? Yeah. And that's a great way to summarize my entire uni career. Yeah. Okay. Lots and lots of late nights.
All right.
And early mornings. So I've gone to taking like a standard average week. So I'm always thinking about it in terms of a template and then blocking in hours at a time. So usually like 2-hour blocks dedicated. And again, I probably only need like a couple, you know what I mean? Like to do it well, but 2 2-hour blocks.
Okay. Nice.
A week.
So look, for me, I looked at my diary, calendar, and I probably had two things that went on my mind. One, I realized, wow, I do a lot of work. Like, you know, my calendar's pretty chocked full during the week. The thing I'm trying to get unstuck on is in terms of spending more time on my inner life and enriching my faith and spirituality. But on the other hand, I thought about what do I have in my calendar, you know, looking at it from a strengths perspective. Because if you look at your overall life, you know, I've just got a heap of meetings and a whole lot of stuff that I do. But actually, I'm pretty happy that I have a lot of the bits and pieces in place that I need. I eat, you know, dinner on a Monday night with our neighbors, and that's kind of a shared communal faith experience thing. You know, Sundays I have a gathering, connect with my church. I have a prayer on Thursday mornings. I have like monthly catch-ups with some friends. So I just have a number of things in place and I'm like, actually, I think that's enough. I think they're the right type of rhythm. So I didn't actually change much. So what I was thinking about is I was thinking about our pre-commitments and the idea that when you put time in your calendar, you're like Ulysses, is it? Kind of tying himself to the mast and saying, this is who I want to be, even if I don't feel like it, or even if my emotions kind of push me somewhere else. I think what I've realized is I've put in pre-commitments years ago that are still the right rhythms. And they're holding me true, even though there's a wrestle in my inner life. The patterns and rhythms themselves are really helpful. So I'm just going to continue.
Mm. It's almost as if you've established those really helpful anchors.
Yeah, it's like in a different time of life when there was motivation to put more energy into something, I created rhythms and patterns, and I'm going to keep the habits going because they see me through. Mm. And that's a really helpful thing. So, Matt, let's talk about one of our long-term sponsors from Tasmania, an Australian-owned company called Bulk Nutrients.
Bulk Nutrients. They make fantastic, affordable, and top-quality supplements. Mm. So, like, we're talking whey protein powders. We're talking about different types of protein powders. We're talking about mineral supplements. We're talking about vitamins.
Yeah, great. And, look, the beautiful thing is they post them directly to you at affordable prices. Bulk Nutrients are a great employer. I know they've got a great culture. I've worked with their leaders, you know, and I highly rate the company, not just because of what they do, but because they serve the local community and produce fantastic, affordable products that are high quality. quality.
And on top of all of that, they've offered us and our listeners very generously a 5% discount.
Yep.
So there's a code. If you go to bulknutrients.com.au, put in your order. If you spend more than $45, then just put in Spacemakers in the coupon code and you'll get your 5% off.
So check out the link in the show notes, use Spacemakers as a code and improve your health. So Matt, let's just talk about a bit more of the research. I mean, I think people do recognize intuitively that behavior is contagious and that, you know, we become who we spend time with. But what are some of your thoughts around that?
So this is like a mixture of thoughts, but largely like stuff that you and I have read, like going back to that research, which again, just I think largely confirms what most people kind of pick up from their lived experience. So the first like really interesting study, and this one was particularly good because of its length. So it's longitudinal. So it went for 32-year time span and it involved thousands of adults. It was undertaken by Harvard professor Nicholas Christakis and his associate James Fowler. And they kind of came up with the idea that behavior, and this is wild. It's spread, if you like, almost like a ripple effect through social ties.
It's contagious.
Yeah, it's contagious, and not because like it acts like a virus, but more to the point that humans, we're designed to be such social creatures and animals that so much of my behavior is influenced by what I observe and then pick up and imitate. Mm. So it's a, you know, like what do they say? It's often more caught than taught. Mm. So it's not even like conscious or explicit. It's not someone sit me down and say, hey, Matt, you should think about doing da 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 da, because I do and it works for me. It's more I observe you. And if we're close, particularly, I'm going to observe you across multiple domains in life. And I'm always kind of, part of me is always discerning, do I like this? As in, do I think it's working out for Dan? And then somewhere that could maybe work out for me. I admire this trait, so I'm going to try it. I'm going to pick it up, try it on myself. So
and almost your baseline of what is normal and healthy and right is shaped by those you're around.
Yeah.
So if all your friends, I don't know, are downloading movies illegally, or I don't know, maybe, you know, stealing. I don't know. I'm thinking, God, now I've gone.
Some heavy examples.
If all your friends do a particular behavior, which therefore it kind of becomes socially normal.
Yeah, that's right.
And therefore, well, everyone does it, so I'll do it. And obviously the same is true with positive behaviors.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's the and that's a really important point. Just because it's contagious and just because I mimic it does not mean that it's good for me. Mm-hmm. In terms of like objectively, if you were an impartial observer, you'd say, hey, that's really working out well for Matt. One of the classic ones is around obesity. So again, these guys found that if a close friend becomes obese, then a person's own risk of obesity is increased by 57%.
It's amazing.
I know. Yeah. And that sounds so strong to me, like so potent.
And that's been shown with smoking. I think.
Yeah, that's right. Smoking. And I think, like, you know, the flip side being, it's also had like if your friend becomes a runner, for example, or starts to take exercise a lot more seriously, then again, like the positive flip side is that you're going to be a lot more inclined to take up some kind of healthy exercise routine as well. Okay. So again, it's the kind of thing that is mirrored in the science and the research that people find mirrored in their own personal experience. Like going back to our good friends at Bulk, so long-term sponsors of the show, I know that in their two facilities, so both admin facility as well as their manufacturing plant, they've installed gyms. And so they've got really, really great gyms. They encourage all their employees to go and use those gyms, like whether it's, you know, 9 to 5 or whether it's outside of hours. So they're always accessible as far as I know, like, you know, kind of any time. And I know I've got a mate who works there and he said he kind of lapsed with his own gym habit before starting there. But you know, he's on the floor, he's working hard. So he's doing pretty hard physical labor every day, like on the manufacturing floor. And he said, like, his mates there, come on, mate, it's time to hit the gym afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, look, so true. Like, I remember being in a hospital setting and every single day, like, there was chocolates every day because, you know, patients are always giving you chocolates. And so I ate heaps and heaps of sugar because you just sit down and there's food there and habitually ate. Every single birthday, someone brought cake, you know, so it just, it was conducive to bad eating. And then I worked in a different workplace, same job, you know, as a physio, and yet this kind of group were just different and they swam competitively 3 times a week in the hydrotherapy pool. And I just did it because everyone else did. And then they swam on the weekends and people talked about fitness. And and I got healthier, you know, and it was just a clear contrast between two workplaces, both well-meaning, you know, and there were positives with the kind of social chocolate culture as well, but just not so good for my health and pre-diabetes. But that's just a social thing, right?
Yeah. I've been trying to like to think of how best to kind of sum it up. Mm. And the closest thing to pithy that I've come up with thus far is that people make being a kind of person plausible. So like you surround yourself with people who swim three times a week. So, yeah, so suddenly the idea of you being the kind of person who actually does that and you hadn't done it before, it becomes plausible. Mm. It becomes that bit more like realistic.
Does it work a little bit? I don't know the research in this, but so I've got friends who run marathons, and I, you know, I'm the type of guy that can run for 5 minutes at the gym on a treadmill, right? So the idea of a marathon doesn't actually inspire me. Like I look up to these guys and think, well, that's cool that you can do it.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I can do a marathon because it's so far distant from where I am.
Did you want me to tell you how to do it?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not so much that. It's more like I'm wondering if the gap between where you are and the people you're around needs to be somewhat close. Not enormously distant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so if I'm, I don't know, I'm 70,000 a year and I suddenly hang out with like millionaires, well, is that going to motivate me to make money or am I just going to feel bad?
So my advice wasn't going to be like personal coach you on how to run a marathon because I've never actually done it right. But my advice was going to be, well, A, spend more time with that one person and then find four of their mates as well you like and then spend a whole lot of time with all five. And then I think like seriously, eventually.
Okay, so you start by feeling bad, but then eventually you think, okay, maybe I could start running.
Look, you call it bad. I call it like aspirational because like to some degree, like there's going to be like a natural sorting effect, right? So A, you have to find the behavior or the lifestyle kind of, I guess, baseline appealing enough or the people baseline appealing enough that you start to spend a lot of time with them. Mm. So again, we're not talking about like distant social relations as your kind of nearest and dearest. And secondly, like going back to your second example, so sure, I mean, in theory, I could like start, if I started hanging out with five like millionaires, I'd probably start to feel really like maybe like inadequate and feel bad every time it was, you know, the round fell to me to like to pick up the bill for drinks. Like that'd probably break me, right? But in reality, I think the question would be, well, Matt, would five millionaires suddenly want to start hanging out with you?
Yeah, so that probably works both ways.
Yeah. Like, there's a natural like sorting, I think, like in self-selection.
So there is a self-selection.
Okay.
Look, it's an interesting question. I suppose particularly in the context of being stuck, if you're feeling stuck in life and you realize actually the five people around me are actually probably reinforcing the stuckness of my life. We're not saying you should just ditch those friends. You know, there are cases where, you know, particularly if you're struggling with, let's say, kind of, I don't know, substance abuse, you might actually need to change social circles altogether. I've seen people do that.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a friend who actually had to leave one city, move to a different city to get out of kind of a coke habit. Mm. And the bad coke, not the cheap coke.
So the solution wasn't just a switch to Pepsi.
Wasn't just a Pepsi solution. And that was it. That's what he needed. He needed to actually change context because that gave him the motivation. So sometimes you have to change context. But at the same time, I suppose if you feel stuck, you know, maybe the question is, well, who is in your relational world that you're already friends with who you do think could lift you up a bit or motivate you or inspire you or help you be a better version of yourself? And how could you spend more time with that person or people in that relational world?
Exactly. Because this series has been kind of, or season, I should say, this season has been primarily focusing on if you feel stuck in one domain of life, as opposed to kind of the totality of your life feels like one great big puddle is stuck.
Mm.
Yeah. So again, you shouldn't require, I've got to change, I've got to upheave all my social relationships to help address this one domain. It's more a case of my life feels completely stuck in every kind of area. And it really is. Then maybe you've got to, again, think about the radical shifts in terms of people and location and blah, blah, blah. But we're talking, we have been talking about particular domains.
So Matt, let's get practical. I think most people will admit or agree that our company shapes us, but you know, we live in a very isolated, individualized world where so many of us are lonely and it's just hard to even find time to spend time with others, let alone intentionally choose who's shaping you. We've got a few principles. The first one is to choose your tribe wisely. Tell us a bit about that.
Choosing your tribe wisely is important because it's going with your eyes open, knowing that the people, again, who, and by tribe we mean people who you're going to spend a fair bit of time with and who you count as close, right? So these are the people you're voluntarily saying, I'm going to allow them to influence me. So you want to be like, again, going into that with eyes open, because if they don't share the same lived out, not just aspiration, but actually like lived out values that are probably going to be most, I guess, like most kind of manifested in behavior, then they are going to take you in a different direction.
Yeah. And look, there's often a cost to choosing wisely. You know, I mean, I was chatting with my hairdresser just yesterday. She's from New Zealand and has built a business in Hobart, is smashing it, and has got some great, you know, relationships here. But there is a draw back to New Zealand because that's where her oldest and dearest friends are. Her kids are grown up, you know, and there's this sense where maybe I should move back because that's the tribe that kind of energizes me most and who I enjoy spending most time with. And I actually think that's really wise. You know, when I think about picking a job, I actually think too many of us choose jobs and workplaces and cities based on the wrong metrics. You know, will I get the right career? Will I kind of go up the corporate ladder? But actually, I think, like we've talked about before, you know, who your oldest and dearest friends are, who the people are in your life who are going to influence you and influence your kids and make the biggest impact in your life, I think they should be really significant factors in where you choose to live.
I guess what I'm hearing, there's two things that are running parallel, but they're in tension, I think, as well. Because I've got, I'm sure, you've got, I'm sure, most people have got, I'm sure, old friends or old social connections or even like calling family members. And again, like they're just, they've identified perhaps like different values that they're going to live out to you, right? So what we're not saying is that you want to, again, cut them off entirely, yeah? But what we are talking about is that you need to choose a tribe wisely if you want to reinforce and up the chances of desired behaviors being more frequent in your own life.
Mm.
So you won't get that from those particular old friends or family. That's what we're saying, right?
Because they're unless they're particularly helpful in terms motivating.
Yeah. But if they're on a different page, then you won't get
it. If they're on a different page.
Yeah. But at the same time, you don't want to cut them off.
Mm.
I think the critical difference, the thing that holds those two tracks in tension is time spent. So you can, because again, all the research seems to say it's the five people, for example, or your inner tribe who you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Now you can have old friends and you can have like, dear family members, you've got a lot of history with and you don't want to cut them off. And what you've got is special and unique, like we talked about before. But in reality, you're probably not spending a whole lot of time with them. You haven't cut them off. You're still spending a whole lot of time with them. But the connection is so strong, it doesn't rely on needing the same amount of time.
Yep.
But if you want to change something in your own life, particularly if it's a behavior, you're going to need to, again, make sure that the people who you're spending the most time with are on the same page.
Yeah, so intentionally gravitate, particularly if there's an area of your life that you want to change, gravitate to someone who is probably a bit further ahead of where you'd like to be. You know, if it's finances, find someone who's actually doing really well financially and who can learn from.
Those 5 millionaires.
Yeah, 5 million. Not so much to overextend yourself, but to actually, you know, if there's someone who's good at investing, well, then you spend time with them. You know, like,
yeah,
same with obviously fitness, friendship, spirituality, all the different areas. We've talked about fun people and who are more up and coming in the areas you want to be and actually learn from them.
But just the caveat or a caveat, the risk is I think that we've almost presented this in such a way or it can be taken in such a way that either it comes across as mercenary. So like find people who got a desired behavior or trait or outcome that you want and just like zone in on them. That's the first. So we're not saying that, right? As in it's not that simple and we're not that mercenary. That's the first thing. And secondly, even if they got the same, you know, desired behavior or the same aspirations as you, if you're going to spend a lot of time with them, then there's got to be a whole bunch of other stuff that also falls into place. Like you just got to, there's got to be some natural like affinity there with them that you have to be the kind of people who you just like naturally like get along with as well. That's where it kind of gets.
Yeah.
So just, so we're saying that just because someone has the same values, it doesn't mean that you're going to like click with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. There has to be a natural connection point. So how would you start then? If someone feels stuck, they recognize that they need to spend more time with different people or even broaden their social networks because their current networks are continuing to reinforce their stuckness, what are some things you could do?
Yeah, well, how about we go from perhaps easiest to more challenging?
Sounds good.
Okay, so easiest. So the easiest path would be if you've already identified one or two people in your life who you do have like some good, you know, a friendship connection with already or familial connection with already. So you get along with them, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing, they exhibit this, again, this desired behavior or aspiration that you're trying to move towards. So you know, they've already got it. They're, like you said, they're a little bit ahead of you in that regard. So those two crucial ingredients are in place. You get along with them, you've got a pre-existing relationship, and they've got this value that you also value. Then simply, like, turn up the dial on how much time you're spending with them. They're already in your life, so you're not starting from scratch, right? So just turn up, shift things around. Again, time block, more time with them.
Yep.
The second step, so a little bit more challenging, still not like that difficult. I've been thinking about this. You may say, like, want to change, like, pretty drastically your diet and your level of physical activity. And maybe, you know, you think, you know, like, that intellectual capital that we talked about a couple of episodes ago, I'd like to do more reading, for example.
Yeah.
So you could say all that kind of clusters around this general idea. So you can nest all those individual aspirations under the heading or in the bucket of self-development or self-improvement. Mm. You're not going to get all those ticked off at once, and some of them are going to be a bit more demanding than others. What you could do is find a group that's already existing that is kind of adjacent to that stuff. So you find a group that has got some element of self-improvement. Because you know that if you join that group, so like say, for example, you know, you say, well, if I like join a book club, then chances are I'll have some great conversations that are a bit more philosophical, yeah. for example, right? Okay. But chances are, because people are already part of that, have self-selected, and they've got this idea of some degree of self-improvement, you're probably going to find a couple of people in there who, if you said, hey, like, do you want to go swimming this weekend? They go, you know, yeah, chances are, yeah, I would.
Yeah. And look, obviously, even if that in that book club example, you're picking particular types of books or particular types of people. So just you're naturally selecting a growth in a particular type of area by nature of
that's
being
right,
in that
that's
book club.
That's right. In a particular kind of area, but it's probably going to be adjacent to other areas.
And then that opens up avenues potentially if you have an affinity to someone, you connect well with them to then start exercising with them or hanging out or going to the park or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So if you join like the CrossFit box, for example, it's probably not far off saying to someone there, hey, like, do you mind hanging out this weekend and we'll do some meal prep together?
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's why I think even things like if you feel like you're struggling with friendships, full stop, you know, you don't want to walk around saying, hey, I need a friend. You want to actually find something that you enjoy doing. And I think a great way is, you know, either sport, but another way is actually to serve, because when you start serving, you know, I don't know, you join a soup van or a kind of a service-based club, you tend to find people who are, I don't know, wholehearted and generous and thoughtful because that's what people do when they serve, right? So then, like you said, you're adjacent to the types of people who then might become friends and open up different areas of your life.
And then, like we know, at least where we're based, I'm sure it'd be the same in any kind of, you know, bustling cosmopolitan centre like Hobart. There are like men's groups. Yep. There are like women's groups as well. Again, and as far as I'm aware, you can roll up and just like sit in the room and not be pressured to kind of have to spill anything. But you know you're surrounded by a bunch of people, again, who want to some degree, evolve, develop.
Yeah, that makes sense. The rub, though, I would say, is you can join a group and you can still kind of suck and take from people. You know, whenever you join a group, I do think that we need to become the type of people who can serve and give and listen and be generous, even if we don't feel like we're that type of person. That goes back to our previous episode, you know, act your way to being the type of person who cares for others, who's thoughtful, who serves, who is generous, even if you don't feel like doing it. And by becoming that type of person, well, then you'll probably attract others who are like that and therefore reinforce that identity.
Yeah, that's good. So that's the second option.
Yep.
And perhaps like the third and most kind of challenging option is going to be something like along the lines of taking some of your financial capital and paying for a very specific service. And that specific service is going to mean that you've got to be pretty transparent and perhaps vulnerable about what it is that you want to change.
Yeah, so there's there's roles where you want to join a professional, like get professional counselling, coaching, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. But probably, again, chances are that's going to be like one-on-one or it's going to be a small group, and which means you're going to pay more for it up front. And again, it's going to be pretty much, well, we all know that you're here for this very specific thing that you feel stuck in. Let's work on changing it.
One of the reasons I started the Space Makers Dojo, which is kind of my online community, where we meet every fortnight, because it's kind of low bar accountability and low bar support in that sense. You know, you can turn up or you can choose not to, but there's this rhythm where people can turn up every fortnight and say, this is what I'm learning, this is what I'm working on, this is how I'm making space, this is what I'm going to do next fortnight. And then the next fortnight, they'll be asked the same question, what did you do? So I think that's, again, an example of a professional setting where you can put yourself into a community and then grow and learn. But there's lots of those types of examples around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So, Matt, we've talked about traveling alongside others. We've talked about Jack and Jill going up a hill. We've talked about how mountains are easier to climb with others and the importance of accountability. But maybe we just have a pause for a moment like we always do to give our listeners time and space to reflect on what it looks like for them to travel alongside others. Do you need to spend more time with some people and less time with others? Do you need to shift your own perspectives and just acknowledge just how much your context and environment shapes you? Or is there something practical you need to take away from this conversation? Just pause for a moment and try to grab one thing that you can walk away with to travel alongside others. Okay, so Matt, we always like to finish every episode of The Space Makers by getting practical because it's what you do that counts. It's so easy to hear information and to absorb information and to think about ideas. It's actually hard to do something. We've been thinking about how could we help people do something about traveling alongside others, and there's so many options, right? From like getting a counsellor or a director.
We just spent like probably half an hour going through a bunch
of things. Joining a sports club. Like we can't tell you what to do.
No, right? That's,
you
know, right.
It's so individualised.
Yeah. That's
but
right.
We do have one kind of, one idea which we think could work if you need a nudge in the right direction to help you with accountability.
So one idea is that you could ask someone to watch or listen to this podcast with you, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to naturally bring up this idea of being stuck in a particular domain of life. It's going to come up with some strategies as to how to like go about trying to address that. And eventually it's going to get to this episode. So that could be a really good catalyst for just kind of like more naturally or perhaps less awkwardly having that initial conversation where you just introduce this idea of, I guess, like mutual support.
Yeah. And I imagine it's a fairly easy in. Like you're having a coffee with someone and you say, I've been listening to a podcast that I like.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's made me think because this season is about people who feel stuck in an area of life and the podcast kind of guides people through step by step how they might get unstuck.
Yeah.
This is what I've been thinking, and it could be a conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you said, even better if someone else then listens to the first episode and you talk about it, you might even say, hey, how about we actually listen to an episode each, have a coffee every fortnight, and talk about what we did, because it could actually help both of us to move forward. And there's your accountability piece, there's your community piece.
Yeah, like you're doing some healthy bundling there as well, I guess.
Healthy bundling, yeah. But we did actually create this kind of structure so that people could get unstuck together.
Yeah, that's right.
So use it.
If
it's kind of like a scaffolding that makes it easier for you to actually have those unnatural conversations that are a bit more meaningful and real. Well, hopefully the podcast can be the scaffolding you need. You could even get a group of friends and say, look, let's have pizza or have dinner once every week or once a fortnight for the next, 10, 20 weeks, how long it takes. Listen to an episode or watch an episode on YouTube and, talk about it.
The only thing that we'd ask or that we'd actually demand is that you demand that everyone who turns up then has to share the podcast with one other person as well.
Oh, it's perfect. It could be like a pyramid scheme, pay it forward. I like it. Perfect.
So regardless of which way you go about it, our encouragement and our hope is that everyone out there who's listening finds someone who they can travel alongside with in this particular journey and someone who they can both encourage and be encouraged by to shift in the one area that they want to.
Yeah, because if you go back to that X, the chiasma that we talked about in episode one, when you feel like life's a fog, when you're in a hard stretch and you're finding things difficult, we just don't want you to do it alone. Mm. That sucks.
Yeah.
And while it can be hard to travel alongside others because you have to be vulnerable and sometimes it's just hard to find people who are maybe mature enough or thoughtful enough to give you that space, it's really worth the effort. Because I think that's the only thing that can truly help you get over that mountain, at least, you know, with less pain and with a lot more enjoyment than traveling by yourself.
I think, and this is just like paraphrasing what you said, so I'm going to give you credit for this. It may be hard to be accountable and, again, be vulnerable and take the risk of traveling alongside someone else, but it's going to be harder doing it alone.
Hopefully, people are making progress, but we're going to wrap up next week by talking about the goal of the goal, which is a fascinating concept by Dan Heath. We won't kind of ruin it now, but it's about working out what your actual goal is. Yeah, and we're going to wrap up the whole pod course and unveil what we hope will be season 4, which is quite a different topic altogether, and you and I are excited about it. But until next week's final episode of season 3, make space.
Make space.
The Space Makers with Daniel C. and Matt Bain.
Big thanks to our sponsor, Bulk Nutrients. Enjoy a 5% discount on protein powders and health supplements for orders over $45 at bulknutrients.com.au. Just enter the code SPACEMAKERS.
If you feel busy, overloaded, and struggling to keep up, the Spacemakers Dojo is here to help. This online community is for busy professionals like you, dedicated to making space together. For less than $75 a month, you can access our best-selling courses like Email Ninja and Priority Samurai. Join live Zoom training sessions and share your learning with others. Dive into the dojo to regain control of your time and make space in a supportive, accountable community. Visit spacemakers.au/dojo to find out more. Until next time, make space. Are you skinny and bony like Daniel and need to bulk up? Enjoy a 5% discount on protein powders and health supplements for orders over $45 at bulknutrients.com.au. Just enter the code SPACEMAKERS.